Chapter 25. Between the arrival of his notice and the date of his physical, Ron told everyone he met about his situation. It was also during this time that he joined the radio station and got to do his first program. What was called the radio station at the college was actually a PA system, hooked up with about 15 speakers. The station itself consisted of three railroad-like windowless rooms. There were two sliding glass panels that opened onto the auditorium. The first room served as dual purpose, as being a control area for the auditorium's light board and microphone systems. The second room was filled with tape decks, speakers, and other audio equipment that Ron didn't know about. The third room was cork-lined and equipped with two turntables, record racks, swivel chairs, and a silver microphone. The thick white shag carpet lined all three rooms. Ron's first program was between 9 and 10:30 in the morning. Thinking it was a good idea to let his audience know who was playing their music, Ron had prepared a short rap for his inaugural. "Hey, you down there drinking coffee in the snack bar or cafeteria? You working on that paper or reading what you should have finished last night? This is Ron Tuck, who's going to play music for you for the first time. I guess I should tell you right off, I like a lot of Bob Dylan, because I think he's important. So what that means is that if you don't dig Dylan, you better get your head buried, man." Ron turned off the mic and realized that he'd forgotten to cue up a record. He turned the mic back on. "I seem to be a little slow at this, so you're going to have to bear with me for a second. I'm sure I'll be able to get it together." Ron tried to remember how the station manager had showed him to cue up the record by first getting the bit of music and giving the turntable a half turn backwards to give it time to speed up to the necessary speed. When he felt like he had everything in place, he let it rip. The music whined into the cut. He'd started it too close, and his anger banged his fist on the table where the turntable sat. The needle jumped into the air and came down in the middle of the chorus. Dylan was fucking with him. He was sure of it. Dylan was trying to make him look like Mr. Jones for everyone else to see and hear. "I'm really sorry about that, folks." Then he repeated the line with the mic switched on. "I don't seem to be starting out too well. So let me tell you something about myself while I try to get this goddamn thing to work." Ron flipped off the music the second he realized he'd just cursed through 15 speakers that went into the snack bar, cafeteria, and who knew where else. "I guess the reason my head is so screwed up is that I just got my notice to report for my draft physical, and it's really got me feeling like shit. I mean, lousy. Anyway, I think I'm ready to give you Dylan." Ron had queued up the first song on the record. He was too ashamed to go back to Ballad of a Thin Man. As Motorcycle Nightmare crooned its way into the college, Ron lit a cigarette and tried to figure out what to hit them with next. There was a sharp knock on the door. Ron dropped his cigarette into the ashtray and froze like someone caught him with his pants down. He moved to the door where he was greeted with Rebecca Ranelli. "Do you know that you're piping the music into Professor Lanza's class? He's very angry and says that he wants you to stop it right away." Ron didn't know how to make it stop. "I'll take care of it," he said, and abruptly closed the door in her face. He paced back and forth, feeling the wetness of his shirt. He sat down and turned on the mic. "Sorry for the interruption down there in Professor Lanza's class, but at least it's better than the normal dull grind, wasn't it? I'm going to have to close the station down for a little while and try to figure out how to stop going places where I'm not wanted. And until then, what I said about the Dylan thing, that's the only important thing that really happened." Ron walked out of the radio station into the student council room. Julian Willie was sitting with V and three other very weird-looking people. they all burst out laughing when Ron came into the room. Julian came up and stood at attention like he was going to pit a medal on him and then sniggered. You were really cool under pressure in there. I'd like to congratulate you on how you handled that. Ron was too nervous to pay attention to what Julian was saying, and would have to rip out his throat this time. If he was right on Julian's heels, saying, "Do you want me to show you how to run the controls?" Ron smiled and followed V out of the room with the look of someone who had just received a care package. "And a particularly good selection of cuts, too," added Julian as they left. Ron closed the door, concentrating at least on turning the knob correctly. As time got closer, the physical blotted out everything else that Ron thought about. 2 days before he was to present himself for inspection, he got a call from Hank. They were going to get together the night before he was supposed to go. "I got a lot to tell you," said Hank cryptically. "What?" blurted Ron. "I'm going to be living with Joe Lee for a long time." "I figured that," said Ron, trying to conceive how anything could be more important than the government getting its hands on him. "We can talk more when we get together. Have you got any pot?" "Not a joint," said Hank. "Yeah, I've been smoking much stuff either." "Okay," said Ron. "I'll see you about 6 o'clock tomorrow." Ron had always liked the feel of Hank's VW. It was tan, with a fake wood interior and a walnut gear shift that Ron was crazy about. It gave the lever more substance than the little plastic thing that looked like a wheel off a kid's toy truck. Ron had a similar attraction for Hank's thick brown watch band, which Hank had worn since Ron had known him. He watched the wrist and the gear shift moving as the car clicked down the road. Ron realized that he missed the security he'd once felt inside his car. It had been the place he first tried out his new ideas. Hank had already been to college for 2 years and had done well. Ron was startled with the thought of how many times he must have seemed incredibly stupid to his friend. He'd only been at the college a couple of months and already knew his flawed logic and methods of expression were terrible. It was that he'd never done that much in his life that had any meaning. It had almost always been to get over or earn money or to impress someone that he liked. Hank must have been very patient with him. After Ron was in the car, Hank felt awkward. No one except Joe Lee had ridden with him for a long time, and this reminded him of living at home and going to Wellmont. Hank knew that Ron would be very into school and didn't want to talk with that about him with that at all. After he'd run away with Joe Lee, he'd withdrawn from his classes quietly. Hank stared at Ron. He'd been hoping that they'd been able to score some pot. All along, it had been getting stoned that had made Hank feel comfortable enough to get things out. "It's been a long time since we rode the loop together, hasn't it?" said Ron, when he saw Hank want to make one of his familiar turns. "Fuck, I didn't even realize I was doing it." They both laughed. "The loop is something that's in your blood," said Ron. "Do you want to get something to eat?" Hank grimaced. "Do you want to go up to Wellmont and see who's around?" "I'm never going in that place again," said Hank emphatically. "Let's shoot some pool," said Ron, with a tone that indicated this was his last suggestion. "You want to get some coffee?" said Hank. "Sounds good." They drank the coffee, seeming to have thoughts that were drifting away from each other. Hank snuck a glance at his watch, and Ron, who was always attentive to the watch band, tried to read the dial from upside down. "So you really love her," said Ron. "It's not like anything that has ever happened to me before." "Have you thought about having kids?" The question was a surprise, because he hadn't thought of it at all. It didn't seem that he and Joe Lee were doing anything that had any connection to creating a family at all. He wondered why the thought hadn't ever occurred to him. Ron interrupted his thoughts by saying the waitress on the other side of the room had a beautiful body. Ron looked over, but she seemed like a little kid, and her body like a bud that hadn't really begun to open. She looked puny compared to Jolie. "She's pretty," said Hank. "Of course, as luck would have it, she's in the other room, so I can't think of a reason in the world that could make her come here." Hank smiled and decided that it served Ron right. That was just what he thought he wanted. "How's school?" "It's where I should be," said Ron. "Why the fuck is the government trying to get its hands on me? They try to get everybody. I finally got myself to a spot where I'm going to stop acting like an insane lunatic who's never comfortable with anything, and now they want to rip it all away. Just when I was starting to get a good sniff of it, they shove pepper up my nose." "It sucks," said Hank. Ron raised his voice to an intense whisper that could easily be overheard. "I mean, what do they want? They want me to slit throats. That's what they're really looking for? I'd rather do myself in than become a no-good fucking throat slitter." Hank looked around the room quickly. He should go. He felt very far away from things like war and school. Somehow, he was sure that they were part of the same thing and had nothing to do with him anymore. When they got back in the car, Ron said, "She doesn't like me, does she?" Hank was relieved that the evening was almost over before the question came up. He would have enough time to drive Ron home and go have a drink at the Dover Inn before it was time for Joe Lee to get off work. "She doesn't say that much about you." Ron felt that Hank was saying that he wasn't important enough to come up in their conversations. "But what she does say isn't good, is it? She thinks that you don't like the idea of her and me being together. She thinks you're too immature." "What the fuck does she mean, I'm too immature? So she's getting to choose your friends for you now, huh? Did you tell her that I used to have a job at IBM with an immense amount of responsibility? What does she mean, I'm too immature?" "I don't know," said Hank, very amused. "She doesn't know you very well." "I never did anything to her." "Why does she think that?" "Because of the things you said before we got married." Ron looked at him with an incredulous face. He wanted to say, "You're not even really married, and she thinks I'm immature?" But he let his look say it for him, and Hank was pleased that the subject was going to pass. They were quiet for a while. "What things did you tell her that I said?" Ron asked finally. Hank thought, oh shit. He isn't going to let it pass. He had just come up for air. He had fainted and was coming back around in with a rabbit punch. Hank was tired of blocking and ducking just because the people were upset at the way he was living his life. "Look," he said with a modified profound conviction, "you're probably not going to be seeing that much of her anyway. It doesn't really matter what she thinks of you." Hank felt better. He'd thrown a good conversational punch and landed it squarely. Ron decided that he didn't have time for this petty bullshit. He was going to take his physical in the morning. He slipped his hand down to the door handle when they turned onto his block. "I'd better get some sleep so that I have some idea what they're going to do to me tomorrow." "Yes," said Hank. "Good luck." Ron smiled, because Hank intoned the phrase with a Dylan accent that made it sound like a bad dream that it was. "No wonder everybody's got to get stoned," he said, laughing and heading towards his house. Hank drove off thinking that he'd been hard on Ron, but that Jolie was right. He was immature.